Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply. ebaymotors.com.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
What up, Fightful fam, and welcome to 1-2 Punch. Player 1, Shaquille Madjuri. Player 2, Sticky Nick Baldwin of The Score. How's it going, my man?
I mean, I was doing good until you called me Sticky Nick Baldwin. I don't know where that comes from, but
let me tell you where it comes from. Okay. You know, I said this week the kids are taking over, and you and all your genius said we should have some old juice boxes, so this is why you and I are about to get sticky.
So you're just saying apple juice is sticky.
Fair enough.
Nevertheless, I appreciate you having me on. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, man. It's great to reunite. For those unfamiliar, Nick and I have been, several years now, we've been kind of crossing paths, working for same companies, working for different companies, but always staying in touch. Now, let's get right to it. Welcome, guys. This is 1-2 Punch. If you're a fan of the show, thank you as always for tuning in. If this is your first time, let me give you a quick rundown of how it works. 1-2 Punch, it's news talk on a win-lose-draw system. What that means is we're going to highlight the week's biggest winners and losers before doing a preview for UFC Vegas 14. And winners and losers just mean, you know, whose stock went up this week, whose stock went down. And without further ado, I will hit this animated intro. There we go for all our non-audio podcast listeners. I hope you enjoyed that. A quick note, please, if you guys want to help the channel grow, a little subscribe button, a little notification button, and a like. These are just like little things you can do that go such a long way to helping the channel grow. I can't stress it enough. We really appreciate that support. If you guys want to engage with us, hit us up in the chat. We will do our best to get to all the questions, all the comments. We love it when you guys engage. This is more than just a two-man show. And if you're feeling extra generous, a little super chat donation really warms the heart on a cold, rainy day in Vancouver. Okay, Nick, let's just jump right into it. Biggest winner of the week. Now, I don't think this is really the biggest winner of the week because I like to describe Dustin Poirier versus Conor McGregor as a nonstop roller coaster. Every time you think you're at the end, there's another loop. And so we get the news earlier this week that, according from MMA Fighting, that although not officially announced by the UFC, Conor McGregor versus Dustin Poirier 2 is a done deal, January 23rd, UFC 257. Just hours later, Dana White tells ESPN's Brett Okamoto that it is, in fact, not a done deal. It's expected to happen, but it's not assured. At this point, is it a foregone conclusion that it is going to happen?
I don't think anything is a foregone conclusion in the sport until, you know, the pen to paper, they're in the octagon, they're actually fighting. I mean, even when this is a done deal, Conor McGregor, I'm sure, somehow can find his way out of the fight if he wants to, or injuries happen. Like, nothing is a foregone conclusion, especially when you have a fight between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier, you know, the biggest star in the sport who has a history of not fighting that often. As I said, I'm not going to believe that they're actually going to fight until they're fighting. But would I suspect this fight to eventually get finalized for January 23rd, UFC 257 in Las Vegas? Yeah, I do think this fight is going to happen. Conor McGregor has seemed on board more or less from the beginning. Dustin Poirier would be a fool not to want to fight Conor McGregor. He, of course, it seemed like there was a bit of delays on his side just trying to get a better deal, but it appears he has signed the dotted line. Now we're just waiting for Conor. That can be a big hurdle to get over. I doubt it will be in this case, but you just never know when it comes to the Notorious.
Yeah, that is truly the way it goes. Note I want to touch on. According to MMA Fighting's report, Damon Martin says that, especially in light of UFC 256 not losing only Gilbert Burns versus Kamaru Usman, but also Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson, that Conor McGregor is still pushing to have that fight happen December 12th, UFC 256. Dana White has basically rejected anything and everything that Conor McGregor has pitched from the moment that a return, you know, from mid-2020 beyond has been discussed. Do you think the UFC at this point would consider pushing that fight to December, or do you think they're just really firm on January and there's no way they're going to give Conor what he wants?
Well, based on the way Dana White is and the UFC as a whole, I doubt we see that fight get pushed back, or not pushed back, but I guess happening earlier at UFC 256. They already have a title fight on there, Petr Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. Obviously, with the cancellation of Nunes and Anderson, that is what prompted Conor to consider fighting a month earlier. But I know something that ESPN's Ariel Helwani said is that the UFC probably won't consider it just because they already do have a title fight on there. They don't want to have a non-title fight with McGregor in the main event with the title fight below it. I don't understand that reasoning. I don't think Sterling and Yan would have a problem with it, but fair enough. And apparently, I think the bigger issue is that they don't want to give away the pay-per-view points more than they have to. So I suspect if this fight does happen, it'll be in January. I don't think at the end of the day, McGregor has a problem with that. It just kind of feels like Dana White is trying to be the guy that like dictates everything. Conor's trying to be the guy that dictates everything. And now they're kind of like playing a game of cat and mouse. Who can be that guy that actually decides when this happens, if it's for a belt, where it happens? I think on Dana's side, it's really just a matter of they don't want to give McGregor any leverage. They want him to have as little leverage as possible, because when Conor McGregor has leverage, that's dangerous. That is dangerous for the UFC. So I think it's
an interesting, sorry to cut you off there. It's an interesting point you make, because, you know, I've talked to some of my more experienced peers in the industry we've had on the show. Shaheen Al-Shadi comes to mind. And every time I mention the fact that it seems to me that ever since the ESPN deal, where the UFC reportedly has like a guaranteed amount of money that they make from each ESPN event, and then additional money if they cross certain benchmarks in terms of pay-per-view sales, that stripped a lot of control away from fighters being able to leverage their star power, because the UFC always knows what their bottom line is. And I've said that I think at this point, Conor McGregor he will always have more leverage than any other UFC fighters, but that leverage is almost non-existent at this point. Like, he has nothing going for him, right?
I still feel like he does. I mean, as you said, I mean, you recognize he has more leverage even still than everybody. So I guess you are right. I mean, he has as little leverage as he's probably ever had since he became a UFC champion. He hasn't fought since January. With the pandemic, I'm sure that really can't help. It's a weird time. It's a weird, you know, relationship that's going on right now between the UFC and Conor McGregor. I know they don't have to be friends, Dana and Conor, but they usually have been. I mean, Conor's been generally good to work with and vice versa. And now it seems like they're just disagreeing on everything. They don't want to do this date, but they want to do this date. They don't want to do this location, blah, 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 blah. And it's just a really weird dynamic. But I guess that's what happens when you have, you know, a guy like Dana White, a lot of money, a lot of, you know, a lot of power, and Conor McGregor, the biggest star in the sport. That's, you know, things like this are bound to happen, I think.
Yeah, this is starting to sound less and less like a win. Let's just say the win is, it seems like this fight's going to happen.
The
win is for the fans. It's an interesting point you make about Dana White that's always struck me as peculiar. Now, you know, when Dana White says the media don't know what they're talking about, I think he paints it as more of a blanket statement and sort of puts on an aggressive tone. But when he has clarified that statement, he says, you know, the media is welcome to have their feelings about matchmaking, news, et cetera, et cetera. But when it comes to the interworkings of our business, they truly know nothing. And I'll concede to a degree, which is no one knows the UFC's business better than the UFC, and they have been profitable enough and successful enough to, you know, be awarded that stance. The one thing about Dana White that has always kind of struck me as peculiar is his hard-headedness when it comes to very particular things. The one that always stands out is, you know, not wanting Israel Adesanya to spice up his intros. Like, why? How are you going to tell fighters to go and market themselves and then sort of strip any attempt for individuality? The super fights is another weird one. For the longest time in that GSP Anderson Silva era, he was very firmly against the idea of super fights. And now we're looking at possibly Israel Adesanya versus Jan Blachowicz, the latter of whom hasn't even defended his title yet. Right? So that's just always something about Dana that's kind of struck me as odd. I'm sure hard-headedness has served him well in his line of work, but I feel like there may be times where he cares a little bit too much about things that he really doesn't need to care that much about.
And it's not even just about caring about certain things like the walkouts. This is something that would improve the sport, improve his promotion. I mean, if Izzy can really show off his personality, you would think there's a better chance of him becoming a real star, a real superstar. I mean, a walkout isn't everything. I realize that, but it helps. It all adds up. And so for Dana to just brush it off and have, you know, pick your walkout music and you can't walk out to this, you can't do this, it's mind-blowing to me, because these are things that would help the UFC ultimately grow inch by inch.
Now, as we start to move on from this topic, I want to go very quickly to the live chat. Joseph Boza chimes in. They have to be firm. They have Jan versus Sterling for the Bantamweight Championship on that card. I guess for me, the question is, what is going on with Habib? Because if your issue is that Dana likes to... Again, another thing's kind of weird about sometimes, you need a title headlining these pay-per-views. I feel like the only thing stopping Conor, Dustin, from being an interim or undisputed lightweight title fight is whatever's happening with Habib. So we don't really know where he's at right now.
I think with that situation, it really comes down to this. The UFC and Dana White, they don't want Khabib to retire. They don't want Khabib Nurmagomedov to just go away and that's it for his MMA career. They're trying to lure him back. And so to me, it seems like that would be easier to do with him still the lightweight champion. If you take away that belt, take away his lightweight championship, it just feels like Khabib would kind of see that as okay, they don't need me and I don't really want to continue. I'm done. I'm retired. That's it. But if they keep him as a lightweight champion for a couple more months, maybe if they continue to talk to him, they can lure him back out of retirement and to fight again. Dana, you know, right away said, hey, I just talked to Khabib and he was emotional when he announced his retirement. His dad passed away. It was his first win and all that. Dana has been really moving forward with this, you know, notion or this idea that Khabib is going to come back. And by keeping the lightweight title around his waist for a little bit longer, you know, they're just increasing that chance that Khabib does come back.
Now, as we move on to our next win, I don't remember the last time I've had a juice box, particularly apple juice, except for the one I had earlier today because I bought like a six
pack. I'm sure like within a year or two, I'm just going to guess.
Yes, probably knowing me. I'm going to switch to the one shot just so everyone can see me puncture this hole. I don't know if that came out the way it should. There we go. I have a really weird thing. I'll have to try and describe this for primarily audio-only listeners, but ever since I was a kid, I have this weird thing where I don't like the straw to be facing this way. I don't like the straw to be facing in the direction closest to the hole. I like it across the length
of the top. But the real question is, you know, the part that bends, like the whatever.
Yeah.
Do you put that into the box or no? Do you keep that out?
No, I keep that out. Oh, are the people who put it all the way in?
I do. I always have. Oh, but then I shouldn't say I do now.
You're screwing yourself though. Like, what happens if you want to mix it up? What happens if someone else is holding the juice box for you and they just need to like twist it for you? Look at that. What if you're sharing? What if you and a girl are sharing the juice box?
Who's sharing my juice box?
True.
It's COVID season, Shaq.
Fair enough.
Come on.
Fair enough. All right. This is terrific. Thank you for this throwback beverage.
And I don't know if the guys, if your listeners or your watchers can see me right now, but I didn't get a big, or I didn't get a small juice box. I got a big juice box. And I'm gonna pour it into a glass like a gentleman.
All right.
This is how the kids become adults, Shaq. They drink apple juice out of wine glasses.
That's how I used to pretend like I was an adult when I was a kid. It's because it looks like it could be some sort of liquor.
Oh, I'm like still pretending. Yeah,
100%. Okay, let's move on. I want to touch on... Let's go to Bellator real quick. Bellator 252. This is something you and I both sort of earmarked. Let's be honest. Their stretch with CBS Sports Network has been kind of a dud. You know, to no real fault of their own, the fights have just kind of sucked. Bellator 252 on Thursday finally got a win. That was a stellar card from top to bottom. You know, you can just look at the fact that, like, Aaron Pico, Kerry Melendez were on the undercard of this. The three-card main card, Logan Storley versus the guy whose name I cannot pronounce. Can you?
Amosov, that's his last name.
Very nicely done. As well as two featherweight Grand Prix quarterfinal bouts, headlined by Pitbull, Patricio Freire, absolutely demolishing Pedro Carvalho, who looked totally out of his depth in that fight. How big of a deal was it for Bellator to get one good event under their belt, finally?
They needed this. They really, really needed this. It seems like every Bellator card recently, especially since the CBS deal came into place, which it's just, bad luck for Bellator. It's not a matter of the cards weren't good. I mean, Musasi Lima should have been an outstanding fight. That ended up being a bit of a snoozer, to be quite frank. This was the best Bellator card in a long time, probably since the pandemic, maybe even beyond that. Pitbull looked fantastic. I think Emmanuel Sanchez, not really a breakthrough win because he's already was established himself as a contender, but this really was a big statement over Daniel Weichel. And then Pitbull, I mean, as I just said, two fights later, everybody was saying, oh, Sanchez might win this whole thing, and then Pitbull kind of comes out and says, no, I'm still the man at 145. I'm the guy to beat, with his destruction of Pedro, as you said. Pico, Kerry Melendez, UFC vet Devin Powell on the undercard, Lucas Brennan, 20-year-old phenom, 4-0 now, or 5-0 in the MMA. There is a lot to like on this card on paper, and I think the card just really, really delivered. And I think that's crucial. It's too bad that this was like the fifth card on CBS. Mm-hmm. If this was the first card on CBS, then I think Bellator really gained some momentum. Okay. So maybe they can sort of, start that, kick off that momentum from this card. But the past few haven't been great. But this one was needed, and it should be considered a big success.
Now, let me say, in theory, I like the idea of Thursday cards, something in the middle of the week, break it up, something kind of do in the evening. In practice, it's just another weeknight I have to work, so that is never fun. But not to say it's not fun, but I just, you used to presume that I had Thursday nights off, no longer the case. I will say, the idea of like a three-fight main card struck me as odd when it was first presented, but I really, really enjoy 2 hours tops of bite-sized MMA. Get some good fights in on a weekday. I think it's such a refreshing change from the slog that is like 7 to 8 hour long UFC events. How are you liking the pacing of Bellator since they've moved to CBS Sports Network?
It's good. I think the biggest change for me is an earlier start time. Usually they were 10 p.m. Eastern. Now it's like 7 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. maybe at the latest. So I like that a lot. The 3 p.m. or not the 3 p.m., but the three fight main card is kind of strange to me. It feels like it allows them to put more filler between each fight, and it probably just goes on as long. So if they wanted to do four fight main cards, I think that would probably make a bit more sense. But overall, I like it. I like the Thursday night. That just means my Friday nights are generally free, which really doesn't matter in this COVID era, but it's still sort of nice, right? I guess. I do feel bad. I mean, for me as an individual, I like it, but I do feel bad for the Bellator fans in Europe, because that means it's like really early Friday morning. They're working on Friday, and so they can't watch, or they sacrifice their sleep. So I think for the Europe fans, it's kind of not a great situation, but I guess that's something Bellator will have to figure out and see what, matters most to them.
Yeah, I would, with absolutely no information to go off of, my gut would tell me that's probably more a CBS decision than a Bellator decision, because they had been putting so much resources into growing their European following. And I think in some areas, they probably were the number one promotion compared to the UFC, if not in name value, just in the fact that they were running events in places like Milan so frequently and London. Yeah. They were really beating the UFC to the punch when it came to the European market. So shame there. Do you know if they're doing any sort of tape delay for the European market, or is it just live?
I have no idea. I mean, you could go back and watch. So you can always tape it or watch a replay, I'm sure, on DAZN. But it's not the same. I mean, if you want to watch it live, you basically have to get up at 3 a.m. on a work day. Like, that's just not going to happen for most people.
Isn't that interesting, right? If for some reason I can't watch a fight live, let's say, prior to me having to cover events every Saturday night, I used to do most of my work related to pre-fight and post-fight, and I would have weekends off, and so I'd be out partying with friends or hanging out or whatever, and I would have my blinders on. I would not go on Facebook. I would not go on Twitter. I'm like, I am not going to spoil these cards for myself. I'm going to get home and watch him. And although, it's still fun because the mystery is still there, isn't it weird that even if you don't know the results, just knowing that it's already happened and you're watching a replay, it kind of kills that energy in the air, even if you're watching it alone, right?
I think the biggest thing for me, and I don't watch ever since I joined the Score, I have barely watched. I don't think I've missed the UFC since, in the past year, basically. And so I haven't done this for a while. But before that, when I would go back and miss the occasional UFC and watch it the next day or whatever, it always felt weird because I knew I could skip ahead. If a fight was boring, I could do like the 30-second jump ahead. And then oftentimes I would miss a big knockout or something. And it's a weird feeling knowing that this happened 24 hours ago or however long. And you have that ability to just skip through a fight. And often I end up watching just a couple of the fights. So I do like watching the fights live, because usually I just would skip through the rest if I wasn't.
Yeah, I agree with that. Let's go to Joseph real quickly in the live chat. He says, crazy that Koger said that Pitbull is the best 145er in the world, not just in Bellator. I think Pitbull needs to go to UFC to prove it, but whatever. I think but whatever is the right thing. Like, you got to remember, Scott Coker is the promoter. It is his job to make his athletes seem like the biggest deal in the sport. Additionally, you got to think for people like Pitbull. And for a long time, Michael Chandler is in the final stretch of his career, and so he wants to go to UFC, make the money, test himself. If Pitbull is in a place where he can be the predominant guy of the promotion, because he's not just the top featherweight in Bellator, he is arguably their number one fighter right now.
Yeah.
You need to treat him as such, and you also can't expect him to jump ship when he's making good money and getting a lot more face value versus risking being lost in the shuffle of the machine that is the UFC. So I think that's a promoter's job. I think it's healthy. You want, for the sake of the sport, you want to get to a place like we were with Pride and Strikeforce, where the fighters in promotions outside of the UFC are good enough that you can at least humor these questions and not have it be a sure thing, right? Because there was a time post-Strikeforce where if you weren't in the UFC, you were not shit. But Bellator has been doing a good job of building their roster, their welterweights and their lightweights and their featherweights especially. And I think it's good that we can at least have these questions, because I would argue that Pitbull would be a top five featherweight in the UFC without a doubt.
Well, I mean, and objectively, Coker might not even be wrong. Like, of course, he's gonna say that Pitbull's the best and that Lima is the best welterweight and that the light heavyweight division is better than the UFC. That's promoter speak. I totally understand it. He should be saying those things. But if we think about it, Pitbull versus Alexander Volkanovski, to me, that's a competitive fight. I don't know that Volkanovski wins that fight. Like, I would probably favor him to edge out Pitbull on paper, but it's not like that would be a one-sided beatdown, in my opinion. I think Pitbull's absolutely top five, maybe even the best. He really could be.
Well, if you wanna have some way, any tangible way, I know it's MMA math doesn't work, but if you want some sort of way of measuring Pitbull, let's see what Michael Chandler does in the UFC. Because if he goes out there and proves to be a top five lightweight, well, Pitbull beat him. Pitbull's the champ, so we'll see what happens. Caleb Hawkeye in the chat says, what up? Caleb, what up? Let us know. How do you think Volkanovski versus Pitbull would go? And Antoine chimes in, do you see Felder possibly making a run at the belt if he is victorious this weekend? Personally, I'd like to see a fight versus him and Michael Chandler. Antoine, will save Felder talk for the UFC Vegas 14 preview because that main event is basically the only exciting thing happening this Saturday. But regarding him and Chandler, from the beginning, I thought that was the perfect fight for Michael Chandler's UFC debut. What do you think about
Paul Felder?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
it was a perfect measuring stick, I think.
I agree, because Paul Felder, that he's number 7 in the lightweight division, and that's about where I would put Michael Chandler without seeing him fight in the UFC yet. That's about where I would say, okay, he probably doesn't beat like the Tony Fergusons and Dustin Poiriers, but he could beat Dan Hooker and the Paul Felders of the lightweight division, or at least be competitive. So yeah, I think that would have been an outstanding matchup. I think that would have been a lot of fun. And it still could happen. Like, we don't know when Chandler's gonna debut. If Felder gets a quick win, you know, you never know. But yeah, I think something like that would have made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and last thing on the Chandler Felder note until we run back to Felder at the end of the show. I always say you don't want to put, you know, these champions from other organizations into a top 4 or 5 fight. You don't want to give them a Khabib or a Justin Gaethje right away, because there is a bit of a learning curve or an adjustment when you make the jump up to UFC. And examples I like to use are Eddie Alvarez was a huge one, and there's someone else who's skipping my mind right now. But my point is that, you know, Eddie comes, loses to Donald Cerrone, and then ascends up to the championship. Sometimes you need to give these guys a minute to adjust to what UFC level competition is and determine, okay, what do I need to make this successful? And we've seen it on more than one occasion. Marlon Rice, that is exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah. Even Justin Gaethje, you can argue that.
Justin Gaethje, I don't know why I'm missing all these, but those are exactly the three guys I always go to.
Yeah.
Gaethje almost lost to Johnson, Rice lost to a Sun Tsao, and Eddie Alvarez lost to Cerrone. Look at the comebacks they all made. Each of them captured a world title in the UFC.
Marais didn't, but he challenged.
Marais could have in the first round.
Yeah.
Caleb chimes in. I think Volk would be Pitbull, but it would be competitive. I think that's a fair take. And Joseph, we're going to come back to your comment on Felder. Okay, we're heading into the last 15 minutes. We haven't even gone to the losers yet. So I'm just going to say I think Glover Teixeira is a huge winner this week, not just for the impressive performance he put up against Thiago Santos, but the fact that it was so interesting that you have both Jan Blachowicz and Dana White now considering giving Teixeira the light heavyweight title shot. I think that's huge. I think that is what should happen. I don't think a super fight is... It's interesting from Izzy's point of view that we could see Izzy as a champ, but considering the fact that Jan hasn't defended the title, I don't really want to see it right now. Plus, Glover deserves it. The dude's in his 40s. He's had this remarkable comeback. He's on the best run of his entire UFC career. Give him the fucking title shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I echo everything you said, Glover, just because he's getting up there. He won't be around for much longer, and he just deserves it. This isn't doing the old man, as he calls himself, a favor. He deserves a title shot, so give it to him.
Okay, and on that note, let's move on to the losers, because it segues perfectly. We're going to start with yours, Thiago Santos, but first, just a reminder, guys, if you don't mind hitting that subscribe button, tapping that notification bell, leaving a like on this video, all those little acts go such a long way to helping the channel out. Thank you guys for being so active in the chat today. Keep it up. We love talking with you guys. A super chat donation never hurts either. But that is that. Let's get to the loser. Why?
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer. A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time. But the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
What does innovation sound like? It sounds like the luxury of being in the moment with your customer, client, or patient. It sounds like having the right information right when you need it. It sounds like being at your best for your customers and your business. Thanks to Hyland's intelligent content solutions that improve digital processes, innovators everywhere are able to do their thing better, whatever that thing is. Now, who doesn't like the sound of that? Hyland, for innovators everywhere. Visit Hyland.com.
Why do you think Thiago Santos is... I want you to look at the camera, Nick. I'm going to put the one shot on you, and you're going to look at Thiago Santos and tell him why he's a loser.
I can't do that because then I'll just die. Like, that'll be the end of my life. Thiago Santos is going to come to Winnipeg and find me, and that'll be the end of me. This isn't to say he's, like, the biggest loser coming out of a UFC card ever, but I do think his stock goes down. I don't think he lost so much of what he had, but he was potentially fighting for a title shot. You know, Glover could get that shot now with, you know, Izzy, Blachowicz. We're not sure if that'll happen. Santos could have been in that position. He was favored to be in that position. He was coming off a 491-day layoff or 490-day layoff. Knee injuries in the John Jones fight, which he almost won. He won a scorecard against John Jones, one of the best fighters of all time. And now he finds himself in a weird position. It sounds like he's agreed to fight Alexander Rakic in March. So a bit of a quick turnaround for Maheta. But it's just a tough situation because I feel in a way we really saw Santos get exposed on the ground. I know Glover is an extremely good grappler, so there's no shame in getting submitted by him. But Glover got on top and into full mount and sunk in those submission attempts real quick. I don't think he would do that against everybody. I think Thiago Santos does have some pretty blatant holes in his grappling game. And that's something he'll have to fix if he wants to ever fight for the title again. So I think Santos's stock goes down. It does go down, but I do feel at the end of the day, Glover gains more than Santos lost. Like, I think Glover is really just the guy that really shined on Saturday night. So,
yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. And I do think there are a couple things Thiago Santos can lean on, no pun intended, one being the long layoff, and the other being it was a competitive fight. Clearly, there's something he's got to shore up on the grappling defense section, but I think the nice thing about the way light heavyweight shape is shaping up right now is, Glover aside, there are no clear contenders. You got Dominic Reyes fighting Jiří Procházka. If Jiří wins, you could put him in a title shot, but it's like second UFC fight? Dominic Reyes coming off losses to John Jones and Jan Blachowicz. Alexander Rakic is there but not quite there, and you know, depending on how if Devin Clark beats Anthony Smith, I think it kind of devalues Rakic's win over Anthony Smith a little bit. So I think the light heavyweight is in this interesting position where you have a clear top five, but none of them had put together good winning streaks, Glover aside. So I think any one of them could find themselves in the title picture in 2022 if they can get a couple wins under their belt.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the matchup that is planned between Dominic Reyes and Procházka, and now the Santos-Rakic matchup, I mean, if Procházka and Rakic both win, then, I mean, they're the guys at 205 that haven't gotten title shots. And then if Santos and Reyes bounce back then. But I think those two fights in particular will really sort of cement the path for the 205-pound division heading into next year.
Okay. 1SS, we will come back to your comment about PFL shortly. Antoine says he's not excited for the super fight. He'd rather have Jan defend his title. Many viable contenders like Glover. It's the same thing Izzy said. You know, and Andreas Hale sort of argued that there are no clear title challengers for Izzy left at middleweight. I don't quite agree. I think if you're looking at it as, like, you know, who's on a big winning streak, yes, it's a little problematic, but there are still guys in the top five. Jack Hermanson is one who sticks out, who does deserve a title shot, especially with a win in his next fight. Darren Till is someone who would be really exciting to see Izzy match up with. There may be no clear contenders, but there are still interesting fights that Izzy hasn't had at middleweight, and for sure the same goes for light heavyweight. And then 1SS chimes in, wow, Rumble made it seem like Teixeira has no chin anymore. And Antoine also chimes in, the Rumble fight is always why I doubt Glover. I mean, you know, it's Anthony Rumble Johnson, guys. What are you going to do? And Glover, you know, not to say he doesn't have a chin, but he does get stumbled and he does get knocked. Ooh, but yeah, he wears damage. Like, you see it in his body. He just doesn't go out for the most part.
Well, and that's why it's kind of confusing. Like, I don't know whether to consider Glover's chin bad or good, because he does get dropped with shots that shouldn't really drop you. I mean, to me, I'm no fighter, so I probably shouldn't be saying that, but they don't look like they should, you know, flatten a man. Yeah, drop me. But then he does recover. He recovers pretty quickly and well. So does he have a good chin? I mean, I guess so. Like, he's winning his fights and he's not getting knocked out, so...
And as we wrap up on the loser's end, let me make... Oh, and Joseph Boza chimes in. It came out today. Rachic versus Santos is happening on March 6th because he does a better job of our jobs than we do, Nick.
I already mentioned that. What
did
are you?
Okay, well, I'm still going to give Joseph the credit. So,
well, I will too, but I won't let you not give me credit.
Fine. 1SS says, if Anthony Johnson comes back, does he come back as a heavyweight? I think light heavyweight is the sweet spot for him, but I mean, I haven't seen Anthony's physique in a while. He was pretty yoked out for a while, so.
I feel like Rumble at heavyweight is kind of just him being lazy. Like, I don't think 205 is an issue if he gets rid of a bit of muscle, whatever he has to do. I think 205 is very possible.
He also doesn't need that much muscle in MMA. It won't help.
Well, that's just it. I think at heavyweight, his cardio wouldn't be as good. He'd be a bit slower. I think, as you said, 205 is a sweet spot. I definitely agree.
Okay, and last thing on the downs, so we got to get to UFC Vegas 14. I'm going to say UFC 256. They lost Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. All they had going for them was Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson. Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling was added, but then Nunes versus Anderson got dropped. And listen, it's not to say that we haven't had worse pay-per-views this year or that those guys shouldn't be headlining a card. It's just to say that if you look at the UFC's track record, they really like to close the year out with a really big pay-per-view. Typically has multiple title fights on it. If I'm not mistaken, the title fight for last year, the pay-per-view last year, was headlined by Kamaru Usman versus Colby Covington, correct?
Yep. And then Holloway and Volkanovski and...
Nunes, I think, was Nunes on there too.
And Duranemi, yep.
Right? So it's not that it's the pay-per-view is bunk by pay-per-view standards, although it's not great if you look at it outside of the title fights. It's just... pales in comparison to what the UFC usually puts on for their end of the year card. So if I'm looking at UFC 256 on Wiki, which is kind of messy, I see Peter Yan versus Aljamain Sterling. The next biggest fights that catch my eye right now are, this is already outdated because that's Leon Edwards versus Hamzat Chimaev on there, but I see Marvin Vettori versus Jacare Souza, Cub Swanson versus Daniel Pineda, Junior DeSantos versus Cyril Gain, and Mackenzie Dern's on there, Chase Hooper's. They've got like an A side to most of the fights, but not a particularly compelling B side. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, it's a really weak pay-per-view, especially when you compare it to what the UFC usually puts on at the end of the year.
Part of me is happy that Sterling and Yan will get the main event pay-per-view shine, because I think that's an outstanding fight and it deserves that. But yeah, I mean, would we want to have another title fight on there? Would we want to have Kamaru Usman, Gilbert Burns headlining? Absolutely. Do we want some bigger matchups? Definitely. But as I said, I think we have seen worse pay-per-views. This is not the best offering, but it's not the worst either.
Okay, and let's move on to the UFC Vegas 14 preview. I know I just did one of these, but since we're transitioning between segments, one last reminder, guys, hit that subscribe button, notification bell, like button, super chat, regular chat. You guys are super active today. It's a bit of an MMA circus in there, so I like seeing the activity. Little shout out to someone actually mentioned.
Shout out to my old podcast.
Someone on here, I don't remember who it was, but someone actually, we brought you up in one of the other shows, and someone specifically remembered the MMA circus. So you got you got some diehards out there.
I didn't think there was anybody out there, but
no, they are, man. They are. And as we, okay, let's see what people are talking about regarding UFC Vegas 14. I know we had some. I think Antoine mentioned something. Actually, we'll do something else first, just because it's kind of unrelated here. One SSS says, do you think PFL should allow other fighters to fight like Cage Warrior or Titan FC? Do you think PFL should allow other fighters to fight? I'm not sure what you mean by that. If you mean, should they let their guys fight outside of their promotion until they get back on track? Yes, it's very problematic that for a long time they weren't letting their guys fight elsewhere during the pandemic. Although Kayla Harrison has an Invicta FC fight, Nick. So do you know what the deal is? Have they sort of laxed on that, or was Kayla an exception?
So it sounds like they're letting fighters compete in other organizations like Titan or Invicta or Cage Warriors, but UFC and Bellator are the exception. So you're not going to have Lance Palmer all of a sudden sign a multi-fight deal with the UFC and say goodbye to PFL. That's just not going to happen. So it's good that they're doing this, and I'm happy because I know there have been some fighters pretty vocal about not being able to fight, and it really just, it's not a good situation. They shut down their whole season pretty early into the pandemic. A good call at the time, but as UFC comes back, as Bellator has come back, as pro sports, hockey, football, baseball, basketball have all come back, and PFL is still kind of just doing nothing, I feel really bad for the fighters. And so I'm happy that they're sort of loosening up a bit on their rule there. But it's kind of one of those situations where if you're not putting on shows, if someone wants to leave, you really should let them. I understand why you won't, or why you wouldn't as a company. That's not a good business practice, but you know, morally and maybe even legally, I really think we should see more PFL fighters competing in 2020.
Completely agree. And we got some comments here that will tie into our UFC Vegas 14 preview. So let's start here. Does Paul Felder retire on Saturday night? He told MMA Junkie, I think, that if he comes in here on 5 days' notice, 5-round main event, and beats Rafael dos Anjos, former world champion, that, you know, it seems like a nice way for him to ride into the sunset. Paul Felder has sort of tongue-in-cheek joked about being retired for a while now. His analyst duties have really picked up. He's tremendous at it. And I say tongue-in-cheek because it's not like Conor McGregor, where he's, you know, constantly tried to use the word retirement as leverage or to stay relevant. It's not like these washed guys who want one more outing. Paul Felder, you know, has made it clear that his career is coming to an end, but he's never really put the stamp on it. Like he said, he's still interested if the fights are compelling. He said if he wins, he's more likely to retire than if he loses, because he just doesn't really want to go out like that. Do you think Paul Felder retires on Saturday?
I don't. I wouldn't be shocked, just because he did seem heading in that direction after the Dan Hooker fight. But I think that was more just his emotions getting to him, because he said fairly soon after that fight, no, I'm not done, and I'm probably, like, I'm not going to retire. So I think people overall are putting too much into that. I know Felder has been kind of, I saw a headline, I didn't actually read the article, but I saw something the other day that said Felder says retirement option is 50-50 after the RDA fight. So I wouldn't be shocked, but I'm going to say no, because I think at number 7 in the lightweight division, and if he beats RDA, he's still a top contender. He is still one of the best lightweights in the UFC, in the deepest division in the sport. Paul Felder is an elite fighter. And so at 36, he's getting up there. I know he has a family, so that's what makes me feel, okay, this might be it. But competitively, he still has a lot left. And so for that reason, I'm going to lean towards no. I think we see Felder at least a couple more times.
And Antoine Rowe, do you see Paul Felder possibly making a run at the belt if he's victorious this weekend? This is why I think Paul Felder should retire if he beats RDA on Saturday. We had Sean Sheehan on here of Severe MMA, and he said that we're talking about Anderson Silva. I know Anderson Silva is a bit of a different situation. He's much older. He's been a world champion. He's had a really rough stretch. But Sean said for him, when you're at the point, and this is obviously under the stipulation that you are good enough to be a title threat, once you're at the point where winning the title no longer seems like a likely outcome, probably time to hang it up, because what are you doing this for? And when I hear that, and when you hear Paul say that he's already 50-50 on the idea of retirement. I think he has it in his head to some degree that I'm probably not going to be the world champion. And that's not to say that he can't be, because that division is so stacked. And in this era of MMA, we're starting to get back to dominant champions. But for the most part, these guys in the top five in a lot of the divisions are good enough that any one of them could be champion on the right night. So it's not to say that Paul Felder can't be world champion. It's just to say that he probably won't be. And he's got such a great gig here as an analyst, and he's already toying with the idea of retirement. I think the better call is beat RDA, go out over a former world champion, and ride off into the sunset. Why prolong this? I think Paul's a little too smart for that. I think his brains and his brawn are sort of, and his fighting spirit are kind of at odds here.
That's fair. I mean, if Paul Felder wants to retire, I'm not going to say, oh, that was the wrong call. If he says in the cage on Saturday after beating RDA or after losing to RDA, I'm done, this is it, he puts his glove down, I'm not going to go on Twitter and say, hey, Paul messed up, that was the wrong call. I'm going to say, hey, if he wants to retire, that's what he should do. I think Dana White says that all the time, and I think he's more or less right about that. If you're thinking about retirement, you probably should, and I'm certainly not going to, you know, question your decision. I'm going to assume it was well thought out and that's the right call for your life and your career. But, and to your point about him not becoming a champion or not being able to, I agree. I don't think Paul Felder ever wins the lightweight title. I don't think he beats Dustin Poirier. I don't think he beats Tony Ferguson, Justin Gaethje, definitely not Khabib if he comes back. I don't think he would even beat Conor McGregor. But I disagree with the point about you should retire if you've gotten to a point where you're probably not going to win the belt, because very few people win the UFC championship. That is a very lucrative, you know, title. That's a lucrative award to win. Not everybody does it. Very few people accomplish that. It's the pinnacle of mixed martial arts. Not everybody can get there. I think Paul Felder could continue on for two or three more years fighting in the top five or top 10, picking up, you know, paychecks and then doing his commentary as well. I think that would be fine. I don't think just because he doesn't have what it takes to win the belt means he should consider or even follow through with his plan of hanging the gloves up. I don't believe that to be true at all.
You're gonna be mad at me. Sticky Nicky B, are you good to go a few extra minutes, because the live chat Absolutely. Is blowing up today? Okay,
of course.
I set a record here with your star-studded appearance. Joseph Boza has mentioned a few times throughout the chat that Paul Felder got screwed in that slow down on the apple juice there, Nick.
I'm gonna have to go to the bathroom pretty soon if we go too long.
That Paul got screwed in that Dan Hooker fight, and he'd be riding a big win streak if it wasn't for it. Now, you know, most guys have sort of suspect decisions on their record. It's hard for me to sympathize too much with the Dan Hooker decision. I scored it for Paul Felder. A lot of people did. But you have to remember, right before that, he was awarded a split decision against Edson Barboza that most people thought he lost. So, like, I get it, but I'm not saying it's karma or anything like that. But if you're going to, you know, bang the drum that he got screwed by Dan in the Dan Hooker fight, don't forget that Edson Barboza likely should have won their fight very shortly before that. And El Jefe chimes in for the first time, says, I think Felder stops RDA because RDA at 150 is completely drained. We saw that in the Eddie Alvarez fight. He didn't look good against Tony either. I agree. RDA has had problematic weight cuts at lightweight. I will say he looked really good on the weigh-ins today. And he spoke to Brian Campbell of Morning Combat. And he told Brian Campbell, El Jefe, so that may sort of speak to what your concerns are there, that back in his lightweight days, RDA used to cut from 194 down to 155. This time around, he's been much more on point and, you know, consistent with his diet and exercise. And he's walking around between 172 and 174. So 50% less of a weight cut than he used to make, from 40 pounds down to 20 pounds. So I think we saw that reflected in his weigh-in today. And I'm curious to see how that looks in practice. Do you think RDA could see a new jolt of life in him at lightweight?
Potentially, but I'm hesitant just overall, because just because a fighter can move down a division or move up a division, that doesn't mean, I apologize if you can hear some background noise, but maybe
no,
you can't.
All good.
On my point, the fact of the matter is fighters keep getting older. People keep getting older. RDA, just because he's now lighter than he was, that doesn't mean he's 29 years old again. he is still 36 and he's going to be 37. And then, you know, from there. So, I mean, we see Diego Sanchez move down in weight. How did featherweight work out for him? It didn't. We see BJ Penn move down, or we see, you know, Jose Aldo move down and he's lost a couple. Moving around weight, I don't think does a whole lot for you, especially in the latter half of your career. So could we see RDA find some new life just because the stylistic matchups are better at lightweight? For sure. He's not going to be going up against, you know, bigger guys like Colby Covington and Michael Chiesa and Kamaru Usman, especially. So overall, I think RDA, if he can safely and healthy make the 155-pound limit, lightweight's the better option for him. But I also don't think all of a sudden he's going to go from a middling contender at welterweight to a championship material fighter at lightweight. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, as you continue to get older, whether you're fighting at 145, 155, 185, whatever, you just don't improve all of a sudden. You continue to get older. So
I agree. MMA is a young man's game for the most part, but Andre Arlovsky, Glover Teixeira, even Jan Blachowicz to a degree are some people who would beg to differ on that front. Last question for you, Nick, as we wrap up here. Paul Felder versus RDA. Is this a better main event than what we were stuck with 7 days ago?
It is. I think so. I think stylistically, RDA Makhachev could have been interesting. The grappling exchanges would have been kind of fun. But Makhachev was a big favorite. I think he probably would have just gotten RDA to the ground, held him there, done whatever, and we would have seen not the most entertaining fight. It would have been a big win for Makhachev. Gets, you know, a former champion on his resume, you know, a sort of breakthrough performance for Islam, perhaps. But in terms of my excitement personally, I love this Felder RDA main event. I think the fact that Felder's stepping up on 5 days' notice actually makes it kind of more interesting, because if they both had normal fight camps, I would favor Felder by quite a bit. Now it's kind of a coin toss for me. I'm looking forward to seeing what RDA can do at lightweight. I'm looking forward to how does Felder look on 5 days' notice. So yeah, I love this main event. I think we're going to see somewhat of a stand-up war, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And the stakes are higher. I mean, Paul Felder is ranked number 7. Islam Makhachev is number 12. Felder's a way bigger name. So on paper and off paper, I think this fight is definitely better than RDA Makhachev.
Agreed. It kind of echo. I mean, obviously those stakes were way higher, but it kind of echoes when Max Holloway was going to step in on short notice to fight Habib. It was just crazy excitement, and you know, usually when you get these short notice replacements, it's a severe downgrade. To see it be an upgrade is really interesting. Yeah. I will say, I hope we see Islam Makhachev get a big fight soon, because I mean, yes. You know, shout out, he handedly beat our former Pull No Punches co-host Kajan Johnson, my good friend. And we've been waiting to see him fight a top-ranked guy and see, you know, how far can he go? Is he the next Habib? And I don't know when we're going to see that now. It's kind of funny, though, what this whole pandemic has done. Mr. Ian Heinisch, who's been scheduled multiple times this year to fight Brendan Allen, who will instead be fighting Sean Strickland on Saturday. I think Ian has had to pull out numerous times, definitely on more than one occasion, either because he or someone in his camp has been afflicted with the word that I will not say out of fear of being suppressed. And now Ian Heinisch is tabbed to fight Kelvin Gastelum. Like, imagine having to pull out of a fight multiple times and be like, you know what? Forget this other prospect that we wanted you. Here's a former title contender. Go have fun. Yeah. What a big upgrade for him.
Ian Heinisch is, going back to the first segment, one of the biggest winners of the week. I mean, yeah. I mean, Brendan Allen, that's actually kind of a dangerous matchup for Heinisch. Might not have won. Definitely not as big of a name as Gastelum. And now he has a chance to really crack into the top 5, top 10 of middleweight. So, yeah. Big win this week for Ian Heinisch. And he didn't even step into the cage.
And last one here. Last comment. Sorry if we missed anything in the chat today. You guys have been explosive, and I love it. Thank you so much for being so active today, guys. El Jefe says, loves the content. Only person you need is Lucas Granshire. Don't worry, Lucas is coming. I haven't talked to him about it yet, but I was telling Nick, I've been leaning on all these bigger names in the MMA media space who've been, you know, so generous and kind with their time and their energy in this show. Guys like Shaheen Al-Shadi and Andreas Hale and Aaron Bronson or James Lynch, all of them. Sean Ross Sapp, who, a program note, will be back next week. He's going to be doing this show. I'll be doing the Survivor Series post show with him that Sunday. But it's coming. You know, Nick's young, but he's got an old heart in this MMA game. But the goal is, without a doubt, to get some of these younger, lesser, you know, like some of the media guys who are putting in hard work, and girls who are putting in hard work but aren't necessarily getting as much attention. Lucas Grandshire is definitely one of those guys. It's funny, Lucas, I'm pretty sure, when he was first getting into the space, he DM'd me, and I got on Skype with him, and I helped him learn how to use OBS. So it's time for him to return the favor and come make me some money on 1-2 Punch.
I was going to say, you're leaning on guys like me, especially, at the early stage of the
Punch. I mean, listen, I'm telling you, we got MMA Circus fans lurking around in these chats, so it's there. So see, Lucas is coming. Lucas is coming, guys.
My three podcast fans are now 1-2 Punch fans.
So there we go. You're welcome. Love to hear that. Yeah, Lucas is coming. There are a few others who I want to get on who I don't want to say their names yet. But Sean Ross Sapp will be back later this week. If you guys are coming from the Fightful Pro Wrestling side, Denise Salcedo, superstar Denise, will be heading over here sometime in the next several weeks too.
I think you better get the bad boy on pretty soon.
There's no one is going to tank the show worse than Alexander Kaylee.
That is just absurd. That is false. Objectively false.
I do have, yeah, no, I, you know what, I will give Alex Kaylee credit. He gave me my MMA fighting debut on the UFC Vancouver post show, so it's only right that I give him the upgrade of coming onto 1-2 Punch.
How can you let someone do something so nice for you, Shaq, and then just shun him, say, nope, you will ruin my show?
Well, the choices were me and Oscar Willis of the Mac Life, so I feel like Alex Kaylee's hands were tied on that one.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Shout out to Oscar. If you guys don't know Oscar Willis, please go follow him on Twitter. He doesn't get enough attention, but he runs the Mac Life YouTube. He's the guy at all the press conferences. One of the best in the industry. Always gets good scoops. Always puts out hilarious videos. If you haven't seen Jorge Masvidal going through, and I'm just going on a rant here. If you haven't seen Jorge Masvidal go through Oscar Willis's Tinder and swipe for him, best thing you'll see in the MMA sphere ever. Guys, we're running over time here. I'm sure half of you have already tuned out. Thank you to everyone who stayed. Thank you guys so much for engaging with us. Nick, big thank you to you. You can check his work out at The Score, MMA News editor over there. Had a great piece with Josh Johnsey. Look out for us to rip that off for Fightful soon, because he got some good news about Josh Johnsey over there. Please hit subscribe, tap notification bell. Love it when you guys do. To all our audio listeners, thank you guys so much. Always blown away by the numbers over there. Nick, anything you want to take us out on?
No, not really. Just thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. As you mentioned, you can find all of my work over at The Score. You can find me on Twitter at Nick Baldwin MMA, and that's really about it.
All right. I guess I'll say the shitty outro. You guys ready for this? I know you love it. For Fightful MMA, I'm Shaquille Madjuri, and stay tuned for everything Fightful and so delightful. Peace out, everyone.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.